Well, everybody, good morning. These are the wee hours, and I hope to come close to finishing now some of these this final commentary on the cosmic paths. There is less said on the path of the Solar Logoi and the path of absolute sonship, because, of course, they are beyond our understanding. I concluded, this is Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries number 30A. I concluded a 29A and talked about where the paths might lead to, and how path one leads, well, here it all is, you know, and I've done this on the last program. And so if I just go through it slowly, if you wish to freeze the screen, you know, pause this, you can see what I've been thinking about here. And then we move into a treatise on cosmic fire, page 1264. And here, DK gives some of the deeper connections, as many as he can, under the circumstances. I mean, given that it just takes Mahamanvantaras to achieve the goal here, think of it. It takes many Mahamanvantaras for a master to achieve the state of a planetary logos. And there are planetary logoi of all kinds, of course, of different degrees. So one has to evolve through those possible degrees, I suppose. And then it is possible as well from the path of the planetary logoi to switch to path number 5, the ray path. How long does that take? What does one learn? Then, if one wishes to become a solar logos, one of the ways of doing so is to move from path number 5 onto the Deva Kingdom. And from the Deva Kingdom, at I'm sure a very high stage, it is possible then to merge into path number 6. Now others are coming to the path 6 via the path of Earth service. And I don't know what might be possible. It might be possible to move from path 4 to path 5 and then on to the Deva Kingdom and towards path 6. But in any case, human monads and Deva monads can tread path 6, and they are said to merge on path 6. Let's see if I can find this little section. On this latter path, path 6, the two evolutions can merge, and maybe they do need to merge because, well, we're told that path 6, the path of the Solar Logoi, is approached, is entered more by those members of the Deva Kingdom. More of the Deva evolution pass through this path than do the human. But I do wonder about the possibility of the merging of the Deva and human monads, even as certain Deva monads have to merge, or at least cooperate in such a way that they produce together a planetary logos. Now, how this is done, of course, well, is open to speculation and is not given to us to know, but the whole question of the merging of identities upon the path of return has to be carefully thought out. And I am not finished trying to think it out, believe me. So straight from the Deva evolution or from the human evolution, it is possible to reach path 6 or the path of the Solar Logoi, or from the ray path into the Deva evolution, and from there perhaps joining the human monads that have come from the path of Earth service. I'm not sure what different types of beings exist upon the path number 6, because, you know, we do have Manus, let's, you know, just to name a few of the prominent ones, Globe, Lords, Chain, Lords, and then Planetary Logo on path number 3. So on the way to the Planetary Logo, there are a number of different categories into which one can enter. The question is, on the way to the path of the Solar Logo, or in the process of becoming a Solar Logos, and of course one can become a, you know, third aspect Solar Logos, and a second aspect, and a first aspect Solar Logos, but probably there are many other categories as well, lesser categories. What are these categories? We don't know, but we do know that all is hierarchical, and you have to work your way up into the higher ranks of any hierarchy through the lower. And always there is an increasing cooperation and identification and a merging of units together as if they were one, which essentially they are. It's so easy for us to think that our individuality is our individuality, but really it belongs to the one universal logos. All of these different emanations that seem individual are really the consciousness and being of one logos, and all apparent points are really one universal point, which is the universal logos itself. At least this is my theory for the time being. It's so much of my life has been dedicated to trying to overcome the paradoxes of the many and the one. And there are many seemingly insoluble paradoxes. It's difficult. Well, let's see here. Now we can move on into what may be even more difficult. I always think it gets increasingly difficult as we go along, you know, increasingly difficult, but especially when discussing the remote, more remote paths. Just imagine what it would be to discuss what I presume to be synthetic paths, number 8 and 9, corresponding in some ways to the 8th and 9th initiation in the human series of initiations. It will be apparent, DK says here, to all those students who have studied with care. What is it to study with care? How much care? We try, but, you know, always things are overlooked. To all those who have studied with care, the world processes in the light of the law of correspondences, which is the wisest way to study, that the logos of the cosmic planes, on the cosmic planes, is developing inner cosmic vision. Just as man, in his lesser degree, is aiming at the same spiritual, same vision in the system. Well, it will take 3 chakras in connection and in a vivid triangle to evoke the full functioning of the human third eye. So what about the third eye of the Solar Logos? And let's just say, are there planets which stand for the as the center, the head center, let's say, just in general, and the Alta Major center? Well, maybe possibly Mercury for the Ajna, AG. And what would you say? Well, maybe in general Uranus for the head center in general. And these two planets we know are closely related, one being absorbed into the other, Mercury into Uranus, for the head center. Mm-hmm. And what? Let's say what for the Alta Major center? Well, not sure, you know. We don't have, not the normal planets anyway. Maybe one of the veiled planets. For instance, veiled by the moon. Veiled behind, okay, by the moon. anyway, not sure, but let's just say that if three planets come into a relationship, as planets stand for chakras in the, some of them stand for permanent atoms as well. That's kind of mysterious. But anyway, let's just say they stand for chakras. There will be an interrelationship there that a flow between them, which in time will evoke the full functioning, I suppose, of the solar logoic third eye. Remember, these are cosmic beings. Planetary logoi are cosmic beings. And we have a cosmic being in the solar logos. So just the way in man, the combination of head, ajna, and alta starts a triangle going, which over the many, many years gradually is evoking the third eye between the first and third initiation, as I have understood this process. Then, and then by the third initiation, a completed triangle occurring, and the third eye really coming into functioning. Then let's just say the cosmic third eye of our solar logos will be fully functioning by the time the here's cosmic third initiation occurs. Now, you know, at the base of this of the skull, there's a higher analogy to the base of the spine. You kind of wonder, you know, I say this, could Pluto be involved? I have a friend, very fine astrologer, Melvin Artley, who feels that at the base of the skull, there is the thing called the quell, Q-U-E-L-L, and it's related, I think, to Pluto and the release of karma. It's not going to be Saturn, although Saturn does rule the throat center, and you know, there is a strong field that could be connecting the throat and the alta major center. But in any case, the old karma comes up, and you know, it is to the head what the base of the spine is to the entire body, I would say. And Pluto could be involved as a kind of base of spine center for the skull. Well, let's just say for the head. The skull makes it a little too anatomical. So anyway, we don't know what that third planet might be, and, you know, in a way, we don't know for sure what the Ajna and Uranian Ajna and head center correspondence might be, but Uranus seems a very strong possibility for the head center, at least eventually. The three super principles now, as we have discussed, are Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus, and I think in that order from first, second, and third. But eventually it will be the three synthesizing planets. So, yes, and Mercury seems very prominent for the third eye, I believe. Not the third eye, excuse me, the Ajna Center. Sometimes those two are confused, the third eye and the Ajna Center, and it's not to be the case. In the center of the head, there is an etheric organ which evolves, a kind of a super chakra, which gives entree into the inner world. So it might be, it's not exactly the eye of the soul. The eye of the soul is located a little differently, maybe a little higher in the head. So these are technicalities about head structure, which DK says are very occult. But let's just say that the third eye is a kind of evocation of three other planets, in this case, as their fields interact, or of three chakras in man as their field interacts. So I'm not sure that we actually have a correspondence, planetary correspondence of what this third eye is, but maybe it's sun-like, you know, we could say, as the sun does represent various eyes. The third eye could be considered sun-like. It is not, you know, evoked in a full functioning until later in the process of any kind of self-conscious being, like a man or a planetary logos or a solar logos. In the case of the planetary logos, in the case of the planetary logoi, it could be various chain lords. No, that's Constellation Logos. So, chain lords who represent the three centers which evoke the full functioning of the third eye. So in the case of solar locus, it's planetary logos. Now, for the cosmic logos, it is a solar logoi who represent his chakras. So we need, you know, the usual ajna, head center, and maybe some non-sacred solar logos in the neighborhood to undertake the position at the base of the spine, the altar, and major center. Well, you kind of wonder, okay, what have we got here? Could this, is of course speculation, obviously, could this be Sirius for the head center? And let's say Procyon for the Ajna center. This and who knows what? I'd say it would have to be a non-sacred. Let's see. We go non-sacred. I should have that. NS. What is that? NS. Neptune scheme. That won't work. Let's try that. We'll try that. NOS, N-O, okay, N-O-N-S, nons. We'll try that. Non-sacred. Mm-hmm. But there's another way to do it. I could have done it this way. Non-sacred planet. It would have been there. It would have to be a non-sacred solar logos to represent the Elta major center of the cosmic logos. Then on to the one about whom, who is a super constellational logos, and he would need constellations to represent those centers. I'm just, you know, taking the law of analogy here, the law of correspondences, maybe taking it a little bit too far, but taking it somehow. And then maybe then the little bear for the Ajna center, the entirety of the Pleiades for the head center, and the and some, and here's what it'd be, non-sacred constellation for the Alta Major center. Because, you know, as I've said, we have the obvious seven sacreds in any system, but if you look at our planetary logos, look at our, in our solar system, we have a number of those planetary logos who are, of whom we are aware, like Mars and Pluto and the Earth, and they're just non-sacred. And so it is, if we knew more, in a cosmic logos who has solar logoi for his centers, we would have then a non-sacred solar logoi. The ones we're kind of aware of, anyway, seem to be the sacred ones. We cannot be sure. He only says a little bit about Earth, a little bit about our sun and Sirius. It seems to suggest that our sun is not in the logoic, is not a sacred solar logos, and is somehow in the logoic quaternary, just the way Venus is in the, I should have said cosmic logoic quaternary. Just the way Venus is in the solar logoic quaternary, so our sun's soul is in the cosmic logoic quaternary. In other words, apparently, non-sacred, apparently, this is the lower quaternary of which we are speaking. And in a way, I think that the Sirius, I think that Sirius would not be. I think Sirius would be, if Sirius is a member of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, then Sirius would be in the higher triangle. One would almost expect Venus to be in the higher triangle of our logoic system, but apparently it is not. I think we can confirm this. It's always good to try to confirm Venus quaternary. The Lord Venus holds place in the logoic quaternary as Lord of Venus, as does the Lord of Earth. Okay, so is there anything else here? The four schemes which form the logoic quaternary will merge into their synthesizing scheme, that of Saturn, while Venus and Mercury will merge into Uranus and Neptune. And here, we seem to have a different point of view, that Venus is not part of the logoic quaternary. Who knows by that time? It may be now and it may not be then. Planets are like any employee in a system. They move up and occupy higher functions. So this is very interesting, because the implication is that Venus is not part of the logoic quaternary. So maybe this is, as DK says, I'm going to make an interesting, I'm going to call this APIT, and I'm going to call it an apparent contradiction in time. Apparent contradiction in time, okay. Apparent contradiction in time. Because he says that's the kind, when contradictions appear, they are contradictions because of time. They are seen, different things occur in different time contexts, and they may be contradictory, and we're just thinking of our present context. APITS, and I'm going to call this apparent contradictions in time. And maybe that will give me a category when I come to such things. So anyway, I want to go back here and copy this, because it seems to indicate that, all right, and I will, page 405, 406, important pages in Cosmic Fire, TCF 405, 406, because on those pages we're talking about which planets correspond to permanent atoms within our solar logoic system. Okay, so what do we have here? So in this, okay, I guess I got off on a little tangent here, but anyway, it is related. So in the quotation above, we find that Venus is not a member of the lower quaternary, much as we would expect Sirius not to be a member of the cosmic logoic. Cosmic logoic. Okay. Let's do that. We'll make CSLGC. Cosmic Law, Cosmic Logoic. Okay. Much as we would expect Sirius not to be a member of the Cosmic Logoic quaternary. But earlier, we are told that Venus is indeed a member of the logoic quaternary, okay, QT, okay, of the, okay, let's call it logoic quaternary, we'll do it this way, LGQ, and Okay. Logoic quaternary. All right, that Venus is indeed a member of the Logoic quaternary. And let's see, LGQ. LGQ. There it is. And I'll find the quotation for you right here. The Lord Venus holds place in the Logoic quaternary, as does the Lord of Earth. And this is on Cosmic Fire 301. Okay. DCF 301. So then what I will say, that perhaps we are dealing with apparent contradictions in time. Okay. Right. So, this is it, apparent contradictions in time. In other words, like this, what the function that Venus has now may not be the function which Venus will have later. When the absorption of our planetary logoi is occurring. I mean, we're only halfway through. We're far from absorption, although in the case of Venus and Mercury, you could wonder, because apparently absorption has begun, and but it takes a long time, of course. And even on the Earth, we're close to the slow process of absorption beginning, or obscuration, perhaps. So anyway, we have an apparent contradiction in time here, or at least some contradictions are simply apparent contradictions, and others exist because of different time contexts. Well, okay, that was a little bit of a discussion. So this might be called, what is the this, because we have to go back, okay. Just as man is evolving his systemic vision, so on the cosmic planes, the Logos is evolving cosmic vision, and this might be called the development of the cosmic third eye, and this we have reviewed, how this is done, we have reviewed. It is done between the cosmic first and the cosmic third initiation. I imagine it keeps on going, but there is quite a full functioning of the third eye by the time the third initiation is reached for man, right? And of course, the solar logos isn't there yet, but he's getting closer. He has taken the second degree, and already, I suppose, the imagination in connection with the Neptunian functions would really begin to work after the second degree. And the imagination would have a better chance of approximating truth after the second degree. It would have a stronger Buddha connection than just being a lower kind of form-building activity. In the physical plane structure of the eye lies hid the secret, and in this study may come the revelation of the mystery, and this we discussed a bit before. What we do see is that it's as if Master DK doesn't want to say too much in addition. So, not too much in addition is said. This is the same text as found in Initiation Human and Solar, which we gave some attention to. I'll just read this. The foregoing is the same, but you know how it is. I'm told a story that the editors of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire had somehow put the introduction twice in a row. A Treatise on White Magic, that was, not Cosmic Fire. Okay. In other words, let's say we go from page 1 to 50, then we went again from page 1 to 50. And in reading through, you know, the material is so obscure in some ways that they did not recognize that they had printed, or were preparing to print, I don't know how it went exactly, the same text twice. Because when you read the Tibetan, you kind of wonder, you know, have I ever read this before? And that can be a literal occurrence that you don't recognize that you've read this before, at least in the early days. So I was going along here thinking, well, maybe I had not, this is something new, because I expected something new in a treatise on cosmic fire, but it turns out that he pretty well just took what he had said in Initiation Human and Solar, and he repeated this. And I suppose the way to make sure of this is to go to page 1265 of a treatise on cosmic fire. And, only one out here and there. Yes, no, so now let's just check and confirm. When we were looking here at Initiation Human and Solar, it's Initiation Human and Solar 189, so let's just confirm, is it exactly the same? And if it is, then there's nothing else we have to do with it except to reread it. path that the Logos himself is on, it will become apparent, and there it is, and there are the paragraphs, maybe split a little differently. So I'll go back here to, was it 1265? Okay. And I'll have that handy, just in case. And now we'll move to where we thought we were before. Okay. And I'll just read it. A certain portion of the eye is the nucleus of sight and the apparatus of vision itself. Okay. The remainder of the eye remains as a protecting shell. Both parts are required, and neither can exist without the other. And I simply say that the apparatus of sight is the correspondence to the inner esoteric structure of the eye. Correspondence, okay. It is so in the cosmic sense, but the analogy exists on such high levels that words would only dim and blur the truth. And certainly the Tibetan knows this better than we. Certain of the sons of men, a nucleus who reached a very high initiation, you know, in a previous solar system, formed an esoteric group around the Logos when he decided upon further progress. So let's just say they are functioning now as part of his ocular anatomy. We can say that much. They are not functioning as chakras, but they are apparently functioning as part of his external, part of his eye. Now, is it an internal eye? Is it an external eye? Let's just ask that. Is this an internal eye or an external eye? Question mark. In consequence, he formed this solar system. So, in consequence of his decision to move towards further progress, a desire for cosmic manifestation urging him on, and that tells us something about his status, although it may be that he even achieved the first initiation in this cosmic incarnation and not in the last one, which is in a way the analog to personality development. So we don't achieve the first initiation as human beings when we are becoming, developing our personality, right? But when we start to come under the regime of the soul, then we achieve the first initiation, and it is in this solar system particularly that the cosmic soul of the solar logos is being activated. As I say, there are often many times easier correspondence to understand between the man, and the solar logos than between man and the planetary logos. So in consequence of this decision for further progress, he decided, he formed the solar system, desire for cosmic manifestation urging him on, but probably also, if I can say it, just as is the case for man, also will to redeem. This esoteric group remains with the Logos upon the atomic or the first plane of the system. So it you know, I think we're dealing here with the etheric eye, though it will naturally reflect in the structure of the solar-logoic physical eye, H-Y-S, on the subjective or inner side. Okay, so the atomic or first subplane on the subjective or inner side, so we're talking about, you know, the logoic plane, it is subjective for us, and it corresponds in an occult sense to the pupil of the eye, which is the great receiver of all that is modulated and allowed to enter by the iris. The real home of these great entities is upon the cosmic Buddhic plane, and I did discuss this. I said, are there monads on the cosmic Buddhic plane? Because, you know, as I said, on these higher paths, and obviously they've taken some kind of higher path, I suppose, out of the solar system, so it seems, the monad can change its position. As I've said, the monad of the solar angels, where is it? I suspect it's on the cosmic astral plane, on the monadic plane of the cosmic astral plane. And maybe that's the case for the first entities in the first three manifested hierarchies, the divine lives, the divine builders, and the lesser builders, or triple flames, or whatever they're called there, the triple flowers and the triads. So anytime let me make a principle here, okay? State a principle that any time there is a monadic plane on a cosmic plane, okay, then that monadic plane can be, quote, home to monads of different statuses, if there's such a word there. Sounds like it should be Latin, but there it is, statuses. So obviously the monad of man has not progressed as far and is not working in the kind of substance that the monad of the triads are working in, or of the divine builders, or of the cosmic or of the divine lives. Their monads are actually working on those higher cosmic etheric planes. And it's not possible that the place of work should be the same place as the monad are found. For instance, the place of work for the human being as a monad is the Buddhic plane. Well, his monad is on the second plane. The Buddhic plane is the fourth of our systemic planes. So the monad will always be located in a higher location than its place of work. When it says the real home of these great entities is upon the cosmic Buddhic plane, it depends on what we mean by home, and as I've said, the word home so often means monad. That's a little review. Gradually, by dint and by dint of hard effort, certain masters, and notice this thing, this doesn't stop, you know, nirvana is not a holiday. It may seem like a temporary ecstasy of realization, but it's not any kind of cosmic relaxation. So let me put that down, that nirvana may be a temporary ecstasy of realization, but it is not a permanent cosmic holiday. If I could just spell this, permanent cosmic holiday. Okay. And only one. Well, you know, in some of the good but lesser teachings, we have the idea that one must reach nirvana and then things are pretty much continue as they are, but then DK assures us that nirvana is but the beginning of the endless way, and that idea is found in the Evans Wentz book. Is it, well, it's about Tibetan masters and secret traditions and so forth. Okay, so gradually by dint of hard effort, certain masters have qualified themselves or are qualifying themselves to take the place of the original members, permitting of their return to a cosmic center around which our system and the great Sirian system revolves. And, well, even if it's not the Pleiades, at least we learn that there is one. Even if not the Pleiades, at least we learn that there is such a center, but I suspect it is the Pleiades. I suspect that. Only one adept here and there has the necessary qualities for the development involves a certain type of response to cosmic vibration. Well, adepts do develop response to cosmic vibration. They do, because on the seven paths, that's exactly what they do. But a certain type of response, therein lies the difference. It means the specializing of the inner sight and the development of a certain amount of cosmic vision. So I would say, you know, a cosmic vision goes on until the end of the universe, the end of this universe, end of this universe. Usually universe, we consider this only one, but there is a rebirthing of the one and only being, non-being. I wonder, being, non-being, that would be interesting. Let me, being, non-being, and I'll call it this way, because in the secret doctrine, that's exactly what Blavatsky says about it. It both is and isn't. Being, being, non-being. That is a peculiar idea, but essential one in occultism. So, so onward until you know, in a sense, the one great universal logos will have a complete cosmic vision. What we could call it at that point, it's only the lower analog of what it is that we can say anything about. More of the Deva evolution passed to this path into the human. Human beings pass to it via the Deva evolution, which can be entered by transference to the fifth, or ray path. And it's there that you think that there's so much Devic development on Sirius, in a way, that you would, because after all, from Sirius come the solar angels, which are Devas. And so there would be the possibility of passing on to the ray path. That's not right. Possibility of passing on to the ray path, RPTH. Okay. It's the Ra path. That's very Egyptian, isn't it? Well, I didn't mean that, did I? RPTH. It should be the ray path. All right. Replace, yes, yes, and go. On this latter path, the two evolutions merge, and from the fifth, the sixth can be entered. Well, it's obvious that either DK did not want to, or did not have the permission to say more about it. But here, in other words, than he did in initiation, human, and solar. But here we have another story. It should be remembered, Rays and Initiations 421, as this peculiarly abstruse subject is approached, that the solar logos is as far removed in the evolutionary sense from our planetary logos as the latter is from the point of attainment of an accepted disciple. Well, what are the implications of that? If it takes many Mahamanvantaras for a master to become a planetary logos, then how many Mahamanvantaras does it take for a planetary logos to become a solar logos. It's like we may be asking about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, but that is not the futile type of question that the jokesters make it be, because it's talking about the degree of substantiation or substantiability or the spatial qualities of an angel. And the question is a being a point, or is it what it seems in extension to consciousness? Because all this consciousness and the appearance of extension is not real. It's just a staging within consciousness of reality. So let's say what we call in philosophy, P-H-Y? Yes, in philosophy we have this term called extension. And it is the appearance of that which we name form in space. In other words, that which, well, let's just say extension seems to, it's all an illusion, seems to occupy space. But what if all beings are really simply non-dimensional points? In which case, then an infinite number of angels. Is there such thing as an infinite number? Well, it seems almost contradiction, because a number is a definite thing and infinite is indefinite, infinite, right? So the finite and the infinite are put together in that term, infinite number. Then an infinite number, an indefinite number of angels who are simply points could dance on the head of a pin. And, well, that gets into things that we might really consider useless speculations, but it deals with what beings really are. What beings really are. So, if I say BBS, there's nothing to it. I'm going to do it this way. B/being, beings, BBS. Let's see if that works. Yes, it does. Anyway, so we might think, you know, we might think that a solar logos is simply a, quote, brother of a planetary logos, and this is true, because the planetary logoi are, in a way, brothers of the master or the human being. But the occult distance or developmental distance between them, when I use a term that I make up like that, I don't want to quote it. Developmental, I just put single quotes. Developmental distance between them is very great. A great in time. So that's such an interesting analogy there, that the solar logos is as far removed in the evolutionary sense from our planetary logos as the latter is from the point of attainment of an accepted disciple. And what we might say is that if you have a sacred planet, the solar logos is as far removed from a sacred planet as the planetary logos is removed from an initiate. And maybe if we have a synthesizing planet, the solar logos is as far removed from a synthesizing planet as the planetary logos is from a master, let us say, or some high initiate. The law of analogy is useful. One has to use it with caution. One has to know when there is an exact correspondence and when there is simply a suggestive relationship. And therein lies a great difference, because if we push analogies too far, we land in the realm of error. And then if the concreting qualities of the mind settles upon our analogies and fixates them so they become enduring thought forms, then we have really introduced error into our thinking. Yet the two are linked by a subjective unity and similarity of objective. Yes, they are linked. Because they're both, I suppose what he means here is planetary logoi and solar logoi. They are both linked in a system which has a particular objective. Okay. I have to be careful that I don't run over here. At certain points upon the way of high revolution, their two lines of energy meet and blend. So we've just been told about this. A planetary logos via the ray path and entry into the deva evolution can join the path of the solar logoi. So the lines of energy meet and blend. And of course, in a solar system, there is alignment between the solar logos of that system and the planetary logoi. Our solar logos also plays a peculiarly interesting part in the development of our entire planetary life. Our entire planetary life. We are a base of spine center, or an eventual base of spine center. We have to look for what we are now and what we may be later. There's a lot of ways that you can associate our planetary logos with either different chakras or different permanent atoms. For instance, it's always seemed to me that we could associate, in terms of permanent atoms, our planetary logos with the mental unit of the solar logos, and the and Venus with the monastic permanent atom. That's kind of an antichoronic relationship, and an antichorona is being built between our planetary logos and the planetary logos of Venus. On the other hand, there's much of our planet that is suggestive of the splenic nature, perhaps, of our solar logos. Excuse me. Pardon me. And yet, there is an analogy given that our Earth is to our solar logos as Draco is to the one about whom naught may be said, which is an obvious base of the spine, a kundalinic relationship. For the sake of clarity, and yet at the same time speaking symbolically, Sanat Kumara might be regarded as a personal disciple of the solar logos, with all that that indicates of cosmic responsibility. So now, let's just say that sometimes Sanat Kumara is considered on his own, and at other times he is regarded as the planetary logos himself. So he is the planetary logos in emanation. What this really means, I think, is that our planetary logos is really a personal disciple of the solar logos. And of course, there may be a hint in here, our planetary logos is still cosmically personal. He is not yet an initiate of the second degree. He still has what? Analogously cosmic selfishness. He hasn't overcome that yet. He has personality issues. We're told that the problem of personality has followed our particular planetary logos. But in any case, there's a direct connection between our solar logos and our planetary logos, manifesting as Sanatkumara in the lower worlds, all characterized by the number four. And at this time, our solar logos appears to be undergoing a minor cosmic initiation on our planetary chain. Let's see, how do we do this? Planetary logo, that's not, okay, planetary chain. On our planetary chain, and on, through our planetary chain, and on the fourth globe, of that chain, the Earth. Terra firma. Not so firma, really, because, you know, some people say, well, the Earth is just Earth. But the Earth globe is a globe lord, and globe lords have to have monads, and monads... even right there, we have something called the divisibility of the spirit, as Master Moria talks about it. When an emanation goes forth, the monad appears to be its own monad, and not the monad from which it came, and it is encapsulated in a certain immersion, depth of immersion in matter. And that encapsulation makes it seem like a unitary monad, its own monad, but every monad is every other monad. And so when we talk about the merging of the monads, we're not talking about anything unnatural. The, quote, merging of the monads is simply a return to a state which essentially exists and has always existed in this or any other universe. All right, these are big philosophical issues. The purpose of it all is to increase the vision of students, and with the increase of vision will come the increase of aspiration to attain that vision, and with the increase of aspiration will come elevation and achievement. So vision, aspiration, elevation, achievement. So vision leads to achievement. That is the idea, and that's the purpose of this kind of discussion, which is so speculative in many ways. But it has to be. What does he call this kind of speculation? Our imaginative rangings, is that what he calls it? You know, to use a strange word. Let us... I think this is a good place. We're going to do the great invocation now, that this is the end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 30A, and we're on page 144 of Path of Higher Evolution compilation. And we'll beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 30B. Page 144 of Paths of Higher Evolution compilation. Okay, let's do that together. I think every once in a while we should, maybe we should every time. Point of light within. Okay, so good. I'll just okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we will see you shortly at the next discussion.